Tim Bontemps, a couple weeks ago, a friend of ours had this to say about the Boston Celtics 2024 season.
I think that's the way you have to look at this Celtics season, where if they don't win the championship, you have to deem it a failure.
So, Tim, do you agree with that guy?
I do agree with that guy. He's a pretty bright guy, as is the new official host of ESPN Daily, my guy Clinton Yates, who I was very glad to see on the ESPN PR account. We had a nice, big, splashy announcement with you color-coded matching with the South by Southwest logo in the background. Man with a theme, my guy Clinton Yates. He's always got style. I was very happy to see that on every front.
Thank you, Tim.
And as for your question.
Yes.
I do think that this is that still applies to the Celtics for all the reasons that it's applied to the Celtics going all the way back to the end of last season.
The Miami Heat's improbable postseason run continues. After blowing a 3-0 series lead, the Heat stop the Celtics in Boston and make history themselves.
This is a team that over the past several years has played in a metric ton of playoff games, has won the most regular season games since Jaylen Brown was drafted in the 2016-17 season, or they're a win or two behind the Milwaukee Bucks, depending on the day. And they've won more playoff games than any team but the Golden State Warriors. The Bucks have won a championship during that run.
It's over. The Bucks have done it. The long wait has ended. After a half century, the Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions once again.
The Golden State Warriors have won three and have been to another finals.
It's over. The Golden State Warriors return to a familiar place. They're on top of the NBA world. The fourth title in 8 years. The Dubs dynasty is still very much alive.
The Celtics have been to the finals once. They haven't won any titles. And this is a franchise. Obviously, it's tied with the Los Angeles Lakers for the most championships in NBA history. This is a team that already views itself as a championship or nothing franchise. This is not a team that's celebrating regular season success. This is a team that has done literally everything it could do but raise an 18th championship banner to the rafters of TD Garden. And if they go through the playoffs healthy and they lose sometime before the finals, or they even get to the finals and lose to somebody there, I think you're going to be hard-pressed to find anybody in Boston who's going to see this as a successful season.
I guess that means that I, too, have to win a championship at some point this season in order to be a success, and good times is mine.
You're always a success, buddy. Don't worry about that.
It always seems to be about the rings, but in the case of the Boston Celtics this season, it really is. This is a team that has nothing left to prove in the regular season. They've been one of the most successful clubs in the NBA for years, but they haven't been able to reach the mountaintop at the end of the season. So today, ESPN NBA writer Tim Bontemps explains to us just how good these Celtics have been in 2023 and 24, and why none of that matters if they aren't clutching the Larry O'Brien trophy when the finals hit triple zeros. I'm Clinton Yates. It's Thursday, March 14th. This is ESPN Daily. Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Tim, roster building in the NBA obviously requires a lot of timing and quite a bit of luck as well. Tell us how the new parts of the Celtics roster came together, and we'll start with the guy you mentioned, Kristaps Porzingis.
Well, you got to go back to last spring and that loss in game seven to the Miami Heat. And it sort of felt at that point, the Celtics knew they had to do some things differently with their team. You know, there'd been discussions over the years about, do they move on from Marcus Smart at different points? They ultimately decided to do that in a pretty stunning trade in late June, the week of the draft. They go get Kristaps Porzingis in a blockbuster three-team trade and end up getting two first-round picks in the deal. I mean, people sort of forget that now, but they get two first-round picks and Porzingis for Marcus Smart. Porzingis had some options to go other places, and he wanted to be a Celtic.
The opportunity to play for a really good team already and to be able to add to that and just being on a high-level organization like Boston, a historic franchise, iconic franchise, made it extremely easy for me to make that decision.
This is a guy who really likes the bright lights and the big stage. He had the best season of his career last year in Washington, and literally no one cared. And you could tell from the moment he got to the Celtics last summer, he was overjoyed to be with not just any team, but with one of the best teams in the league.
How motivating is it that the organization is bringing you in, viewing you as the piece that puts them over the top in their championship pursuit?
How motivating is that?
Correct.
Yeah, it's the most like exciting feeling that you can get, you know? That's why, as I said, it just made it super easy and it made my complete like favorite option that was to come here to Boston.
A team that plays in a market that's obviously incredibly passionate about the franchise, one of the best home court environments in the league, and a team that had a legitimate chance to win a title. And last summer when they made that deal, a lot of people around the league were skeptical to me about how it would work. And they said things along the lines of, well, how is this guy going to like being the fourth option or the third option or the fifth option? How's it going to go if he gets five shots in a game or seven shots in a game? Is he going to like that? Is he going to be okay with that? The truth is, he's been thrilled the entire time. And his ability at both ends to be a rim protector on defense and to be a dynamic floor spacer on offense and also a mismatch nightmare, particularly in the post, where he has been one of the most effective players in the league this season. It has given the Celtics everything they wanted in terms of having another option to attack opposing defenses. Because when we've seen late in the playoffs in the past, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in isolations does not typically go very well. We've seen the Celtics offense bogged down, and it's been a thing that's cost them playoff games at numerous points in the past.
They added another veteran as well with Drew Holiday. How did that deal go down?
Well, this was a pretty fascinating deal, Clinton, because obviously the Milwaukee Bucks and Boston Celtics have sort of been going back and forth atop the Eastern Conference for years now and have played several times in the playoffs. Drew Holiday has been in the middle of a bunch of those series. And I remember texting people the moment the Damian Lillard trade went down and Drew Holiday went to Portland. It was very obvious to me that he was going to wind up with the Celtics because they had the ammunition to go get a deal done. They now, the day before training camp, land Drew Holiday, and suddenly they essentially turn Malcolm Brogdon, Robert Williams, and Marcus Smart into Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis. From a talent standpoint, it was a gigantic upgrade, and I don't think, frankly, it's been talked about enough since the moment the Celtics made the trade, just how significant of an impact that was. The Bucks, whether they meant to or not, hand-delivered him to the Boston Celtics and made Boston a significantly more dangerous opponent for them to play in the playoffs. And if those two teams meet at any point in the playoffs and we have Drew Holiday and Derek White going up against Damian Lillard, that trade is going to come up an awful lot for obvious reasons. And I think it's going to be a big part of why Boston will win that series.
Yeah, but despite the success of this trade, losing Marcus Smart felt like a huge deal for Boston. He was the longest tenured Celtic and was seen as the heart and soul of the team. He was dyeing his hair green, for goodness sakes. They were losing a former Defensive Player of the Year and an outspoken team leader. What made people realize this was actually the right move?
Marcus Smart was, frankly, at a point in his career where he was starting to go down as a player from an athleticism standpoint. He's hitting his 30s. He obviously plays a very physical, demanding style. Porzingis is still a younger player, I think, in his prime. Made a lot of sense to me from a talent perspective. The other thing it did, and I wrote about this earlier this year, it also ceded some territory for Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum to step up as leaders of this team. And I think from the beginning of the season, I've seen some real growth from both of those guys in those areas. Jaylen Brown has been probably the most vocally consistent guy after wins or losses, talking about the need to be preparing for the playoffs at every step of the way. after they had a terrible loss in Cleveland last week where they blew a 20-point fourth quarter lead. He talked about the fact you can't just sweep this game away and forget about it.
Yeah, this is, today matters. You know, whether they want to, everybody wants to throw it away or not, we got to look at the film and address some stuff because that matters. You know, this, your habits are everything. Your mentality is everything. In every game, you can't waste no possessions, can't waste no, you know, time out there on the floor. So, nah, today matters. We need to look at that.
Back in the fall, at the start of training camp, there were a lot of questions about which of the six guys the Celtics have, Tatum, Brown, Holiday, Porzingis, Derek White, and Al Horford, which one of them was not going to start games, which one of them was not going to close games. And Jason Tatum organized a meeting, got everybody in a room, and said, let's make sure we have no issues with any of this stuff now, and we hash this out today. And that meant a lot, I think, to everybody on the team. And it made Joe Mazzulla's life easier because with all six of those guys on the same page and making sure that there weren't going to be any issues with them, that means there's not going to be any issues with anybody else.
Well, let's turn to head coach Joe Mazzulla because we saw how important coaching was last year in the 2023 Eastern Conference Finals. Eric Spoelstra, Miami's head coach, outcoached the Celtics staff, quite obviously. Got a huge contract out of that as well. It was a bit of a disaster for the Celtics. Tell me what Mazzulla's done this season to change the perception that many had about him, especially after that Miami series.
I would push back a little bit on the word disaster from the coaching standpoint last year. Okay. I think Joe Mazzulla, frankly, was being way too harshly judged last year for the job he did. People, I think, were treating him like he was doing a horrible job last year all the way through, which I do not think was the case. What I do think was the case was he was a guy who very naturally felt like he was coaching for his job, I think, at large stretches of last year, because he was a guy who was thrust into this job on an interim basis in crazy circumstances with a team that had just gone to the NBA Finals, with a team that was expected to be a championship caliber team. And you had people saying every day, well, should they go hire a veteran assistant? Should they go hire a veteran head coach? Should they just get rid of this guy? Should they do this? Should they do that? And it's not like Boston's the most forgiving media market to begin with. So I think he did a really good job last year. But what I would say now is coming into this season, he is far more comfortable in who he is, I think, as a coach and what his team is doing as a result of him coaching it. And he now has a full staff that he was able to go out and hire. And I think if you watch how Boston has played throughout the season, you know, it doesn't really show up unless you watch them consistently on a day-to-day basis. But Joe Mazzulla is trying different stuff every day to prepare this team for the playoffs. Like, I'll give you one example. Mentioned that Cavs game last week. Jrue Holiday, one of the elite perimeter defenders in the league. Darius Garland's playing for Cleveland, right? He's not guarding Darius Garland. Who's he guarding? He's guarding Isaac Okoro. For people that don't know anything about the Cavs, Isaac Okoro is a former fifth overall pick who is a very good defensive player, but it's a very, very, very limited offensive player that basically is just a catch and shoot jump shooter and isn't that great at that. So why is Jrue Holiday guarding him? So he can roam around and mess up plays on defense and try to cause chaos all over the place, right? The Celtics are trying little different wrinkles like that all the time. And I think Mazzulla is in a much better place to do that this year. And I think the team overall is in a much better place to do that this year, both from a mentality standpoint and from a talent standpoint. Now the question is, are they going to be able to do it?
Well, that said, MVP, best player on best team is why I want to ask you about Tatum specifically. You're the straw poll guy, but it's tough to be an MVP if you don't seem to have a lot of great clutch moments, which is not something that Tatum is exactly, well, let's just say it's not his strongest suit. Tatum has shot 15 for 46 in clutch time this season. That's 32.6%. And among the 27 players who have at least 45 clutch shots this year, Tatum ranks last in field goal percentage. Not great, Bob.
Well, and by the way, that has been a bugaboo for the Celtics for a while. Jason Tatum in the clutch. And he plays the right way basically the entire game. And then he gets into these clutch situations. And both games against Denver, he had a chance to tie the game with 5 seconds left in the first game in Boston in January.
Tatum spins on Caldwell Pope. Tough follow away. Terrible shot. No good. Rebound Jamal Murray. And the game is over. The win streak is over.
He admitted afterward he really rushed a shot, missed pretty badly with KCP on his hip, a guy who he could easily rise up and score over. He had maybe the worst game I've ever seen him play in Denver last week, and probably the biggest game of the regular season remaining. Just really was not involved in the game at all. Had a sundial length open three with 45 seconds left and missed it very badly.
Tatum, open three. No good. Would have given Boston a lead. Jokic has the rebound, and he's fouled in the backcourt.
Wow.
Unbelievable sequence.
Now, look, bad games happen. It's not the end of the world. It's one game in March. But when you talk about what concerns you about Boston in terms of can they actually get to the mountaintop and win the title, it's late game execution. They've done an unbelievable job putting the team together. But you get in the last 5 minutes of a game, if they're playing Denver, I'll just ask you, who do you have more faith in? Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic running the pick and roll repeatedly in the final 5 minutes of the game, or Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown making the right plays in the final 5 minutes of a game in game six or seven of the NBA Finals? I can't pick them to beat Nikola Jokic, 4 out of 7. Despite the truly historic numbers they have across the board, it's the one thing that's going to be in the back of people's minds when they get to the playoffs. Like, can these guys really get over the top and get this done? And they're not going to be able to prove they can until they go out and actually do it.
Men lie, women lie, but the numbers don't lie. The C's are dominating. That's what we're talking about coming up. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Good times. You mentioned that last week it wasn't that the Celtics beat the Warriors, but it was how they did it. They ended up with a 52-point win. They were up 44 at the half over the Dubs, for those of you that forgot. What did this game tell you about Boston?
Well, it tells me that when the Celtics are going, they look as good as anybody who's ever played basketball. And when they in particular are making their threes, they're unbelievably difficult to beat because their top eight guys who play all shoot the ball really well. You can't double off anybody. They move the ball really well. Like, they play the right way. Joe Mazzulla's put these guys in really good spots. And that's why it really does come down to what's going to happen in these late and close games, because that's the only thing you can really point to and say, well, I'm not sure these guys are good enough, other than just the pure who's the best player argument that we always talk about in a playoff series. Because, again, at the super highest level, Jason Tatum's probably losing that fight more often than not deep in the playoffs.
Speed and space, baby. It sounds like college football, except it's happening on a basketball court. Let's get into some of these numbers. That win over the Warriors gave them three wins of at least 50 points this season, which is the most in NBA history. And during their 11-game win streak, they had a point differential of plus 243. Please talk to me about some of these stats and what sets them apart from some other teams. Forget about just the standings, the actual production.
Well, the numbers are out of control. You mentioned some of them there. That 243-point differential is the biggest over an 11-game span in NBA history. Even after a couple losses last week, they still have a net rating north of 11. There's only 5 or 6 teams in the history of the sport that have done that. Teams like the first KD Warriors team, teams like the 96 and 97 Bulls teams, teams like the Lakers that won the record 33 games in 1972. I mean, we're talking about the tippity top of teams. They have the statistical resume of an all-time great team. They're probably going to wind up with somewhere in the neighborhood of 65 or more wins, which again is another barometer of if you get to that number or higher, you're seen as an all-time great team. Like, everything across the board says the Celtics are an all-time great regular season team. Maybe we'll talk in June and be like, you know what? We should have believed more in the Celtics team in March, and we should have assumed that they were going to be able to translate this to the playoffs. But this is how it goes in the NBA. Until you get to the mountaintop and win, you typically have to go up the ladder year after year and sort of methodically make progress. There's not usually a team that skips steps. And the Celtics have taken a little longer to go up the ladder than some, but that it's the same process we've seen a lot of times. And it's also worth remembering, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, they're still only like 26 and 27, right? If despite the fact that they've been around seemingly forever at this point, these are guys because of where they landed and with teams that were immediately really good, they've had way more reps late in the playoffs than virtually anybody their age has before. So they are just getting to their prime. They do have a team that's perfectly constructed around them, and they're showing right now, they're doing everything they can through April 15th to say, we're good enough to win a title. But now they just have to translate that from April 15th to June 15th.
Denver would be at the end of that road in terms of trying to get the Larry O'Brien trophy, but they're still the Eastern Conference. There are a ton of games ahead. Who is one team and how would they do it that is going to give or could give the Celtics squad a bit of a hurdle?
I would like to give a lot of answers because a month or two ago, I was unbelievably excited about the Eastern Conference playoffs because of all the potential storylines that we had. You had the Cavs with Donovan Mitchell potentially being one year away from free agency this summer and what his future is going to be, playing great, steamrolling through the conference, getting Evan Mobley and Darius Garland back on the court. They've had 1,000 injuries. It's impossible to know where they're going to be. The Bucks, people have been waiting for that team to get itself sorted out. They keep declaring. My buddy Brian Windhorst keeps trying to declare they look good. And every time he tries to say they look good, they play some good teams and they lose. So I don't know what to make of them. They're better now with Doc Rivers, but they still don't really look very convincing to me. Certainly not to beat a team like Boston. Now, they're probably the best argument because you could just say on a sheer talent standpoint, you've got Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's the best player in that series. You've got Damian Lillard, who again, if you're talking about clutch time issues for Boston, if the Bucks can have it be a competitive game with 5 minutes to go and it's Dame versus Tatum and Brown, you're probably going to go with Dame based off his history to close that game out. However, again, the Celtics are probably the single best team equipped to stop Dame now in the league by getting Drew Holiday on their team, by having Derek White on their team. So ultimately, it's probably the Bucks, but I don't like that matchup. Philadelphia has Joel Embiid, who the Celtics don't have a great answer for, probably was playing better than anybody on the planet before he got hurt. We still don't know exactly what his timeline for a return is. We don't know how healthy he's going to be or if he's going to be out there at all. So, you know, again, if Embiid is healthy and playing well, they could be a team that could give Boston trouble. The Knicks had a fantastic January, looked like a team with a bunch of big rugged defenders, Jalen Brunson having a phenomenal season. Maybe they could give the Celtics some trouble. They've been missing their entire starting front court for a month and a half. But, you know, we don't know what their health situation is going to be. Where's Julius Randle's shoulder going to be, right? So you go down the list, and I was hoping to see 3 rounds of competitive games for Boston. Like, that could happen, and we could see them get tested in 3 different ways in 3 different series. They also could get a bunch of injury-ravaged teams and they could go 12-1 and we might not learn anything. So that's the thing that's a shame of it is the East was looking so competitive and so fun with so many different interesting wrinkles and variables throughout it. And really now, we're basically just sitting here praying that these guys are healthy by the end of the regular season so we could actually see some competitive series in the playoffs. And it's not just, well, this team is banged up and this team is healthy, so we're just going to have a walkthrough.
Last thing I'll ask you, do you like those unis with the gold drop shadows? I do. I'm not normally big fans of alterations of sort of classic looks, but I think they wore them.
You're talking about the Celtics
city
jerseys?
Yes, the Celtics, yes. They have the gold.
They're reprehensible. Reprehensible. I agree with you in a vacuum. Those jerseys are fine. Okay? But the NBA, to me, like, we could have a 5-hour discussion on the way the NBA presents games.
Sure.
And treats the game product in general, which is partly why I think ratings across the board are down, because they tend to signal to people, as we've talked about privately for a long time,
this is that true.
Everything but the games matter. The jersey thing is, to me, a significant part of it. Like, go back to this game last week, okay? Boston's playing Denver. I did, like, 7 TV hits before the game. It's the biggest game remaining on the regular season schedule. They had a fantastic game 6 weeks before.
Yeah.
Got the best player in the world against probably the best collection of talent in the league. Super fun, fascinating matchup. We've got Denver wearing these horrific 52-80 city jerseys that are just awful. And you've got the Celtics wearing these white, on the road, white alternate jerseys. And it just looks ridiculous. Like, the Celtics, the Knicks, the Lakers, the Bulls, those teams should never be wearing random, alternate, weird jerseys. They have unbelievable jerseys. Just show the best product that you have. But instead, we had the biggest game of the regular season, and these guys were in clip art jerseys. It's like, what are we doing here?
The man said he likes the theme, and I believe.
Well, listen, I think in you, if you look at how, I mean, you're the baseball guy.
Yes.
Right? Like, Nike, let's be honest, they have not done a good job with these jerseys.
We don't have time in this podcast for this, Timothy. Thank you.
But I'm just saying, they haven't. They haven't across the board. It's been bad for the NBA, and certainly it's not up to a great start for baseball.
Appreciate your good times.
Anytime, buddy.
I'm Clinton Yates. This has been ESPN Daily. We'll talk to you tomorrow, kiddos.